Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Hi, I'm Caitlin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Caitlin.
Do you guys stand, or can I sit, or
I stand? God damn it.
Fucking me up all kinds of ways right now. Okay. Okay, so I only have 10 minutes, which means I have to keep it short because I have a tendency to go on and on and on. I'm from San Jose. Tinica asked me to speak like fucking a really long time ago. And it's always really a big honor to be asked to speak at any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, but outside of your hometown, it's kind of special and also really scary, so sorry. So I've been sober for 18 months, and in the last 18 months, I have moved for the first time and then two more times. I started college. I went back to college after a very long hiatus. Went back to college, my dog, his eye popped out, and then they had to, like, take it out, so he only has one eye now. He also just had a tumor removed and 8 teeth pulled. My dog is, like, the only thing I have that's close to a child, so that's why I care about that. And then a month ago today, my dad passed away. So that's pretty much all I really talk about now when I go to meetings, because it's still very fresh for me, and I've been in and out of AA for 6 years, about 6 years. Like, the first time I came here was December 2009. And back then, I was not an alcoholic. You know, I was just a drug addict. Drinking was not my problem. I was just really addicted to opiates. I was working as a pharmacy technician. I know. It was such a sweet setup for me. I had that job for 8 years. I stole from that job for 7. They caught me, finally, thank God. Like, I mean, to this day, December 15th, 2009 is a very important day for me because it was the first time that I really had to admit to myself that I had a problem. My problem being that I was in handcuffs at work, which is, like, super embarrassing. So they took me to jail, and I kicked, and it was really just absolutely miserable. By the time in that 7 years, like, when they told me that alcoholism was a progressive illness, I immediately thought back, like, when I first got to AA, I immediately thought back to my opiate addiction and how it had progressed, because it went from taking, like, I've gone my mouth, sorry. Went from taking, like, one Vicodin that I, like, found on the floor of the pharmacy one day, a day, to taking 45 Norcos, which is twice as strong as Vicodin. And so I was taking 45 of those a day and, like, sometimes getting high and sometimes not. It was really a crapshoot. I really had to, like, plan it out. It was very it had taken complete control of my life. I wasn't really drinking anymore because I didn't have time. I would get sick and whatever, so it was just really, the drugs have sort of taken over. So if you don't like hearing about drugs in a story, then I don't know, go smoke or something, because that's what this is going to be. So I got sober because I had to, you know, like, I lost my job. All of a sudden, this whole, like, life I had built up for myself for 7 years or whatever just came crashing down right away. Like, all of a sudden, this drug problem that I had been hiding, or at least thinking that I had been hiding so well, like, came to the forefront, and my poor parents were like, what the fuck do we do with you? I'm the youngest of 7 children in a Mormon family. No one else is like me, okay? I mean, in my family. my parents were just like, they're like really old, and they just didn't really know what to do with me. And they certainly didn't recognize any of the, like, warning signs or whatever, like, leading up to this. So this was really surprising. When I called my mom while she was at work from Elmwood, they were like, very surprised that that was where I was calling from. But it brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. So, like I said, it's the best, worst day of my life. Now I can really look at it as the best. At the time, it was really awful. I didn't enjoy that very much. But it brought me here. And for the next 6 years, I kind of just went in and out. Like, sometimes I'd stay around for a while and pick up a little bit of time. And I got to know a lot of people. I made a lot of friends in AA. Every time I would relapse, I didn't really lose that many friends in AA, which really meant a lot to me. If you have friends that go out, like, don't just shun them. I mean, it meant a lot to me knowing that I could come back and that there would still be people here who cared about me, you know? But during those relapses, it got progressively worse as it, you know, as we talk about in the book, like it, as was predicted, as I did not believe would happen, but as it did, it got worse. Every time I would build my life up a little bit, get it going a little bit better, always in periods of sobriety, I would get loaded again and tear it all down. And it was either because I was celebrating how great I was doing, or because I was so afraid of what I was going to lose, or just because I had lost contact with with that power greater than myself that had gotten me sober in the first place. Like, I did not have the ability to do that. If I had had that ability, I would not have, you know, 5 minutes, thank you. I would not have needed to come here in the first place. You know, if I had the willpower to get sober on my own, I would have done that. Like, I wouldn't have had to come here. I wouldn't have wanted to come here. I certainly wouldn't want to have to do all the shit that we have to do when we're here. Like, speak at meetings and give you my money and fucking read this book that was written in, like, 1939 by a fucking... I don't really like Bill that much, so sorry. I have an issue with Bill. Dr. Bob's cool. I feel like we would have been homies, but me and Bill, nah, I don't like you. So written by this old book, like by this guy. There's just a lot of things in AA that I didn't feel comfortable doing and I didn't really like enjoy doing. And, you know, up until this point in my life, like if I wasn't going to enjoy it, I wasn't going to do it. AA has really taught me how to be a grown-up, so now I do things all the time that I don't necessarily want to do, or things that don't seem fun at the time, but then I'm grateful that I did them later, like school. So I went back to school 18 months ago. I just finished up relapsing, so I had applied to school while I was loaded, which is, I don't know how that happened, but I did, and I got in, because they don't drug test you. And so I sobered up because I knew if I didn't sober up that I was not going to be able to be successful in school. Like in the haze of all of my craziness, like I knew that as a fact. So I got sober. I got a sponsor down there. I doing the steps again. I started sponsoring girls, taking them through the steps. And as hard as school is and how demanding it is of my time, I always have to make time for Alcoholics Anonymous, because if I don't, like, everything else falls to the wayside anyway, and all this will have been for nothing, and I just don't want to do that again. Like, fuck no. So I stayed around, and I stayed sober, and at Christmas this past year, so December 2015, December's not a great month for my family, FYI, like, people always die and get arrested and whatever. So my dad's in the hospital over Christmas, and I'm in school, I'm a kinesiology major. When I was hearing about all the problems he was having, I knew what that meant. You know, I knew I've taken enough anatomy, enough biology, and all this other kind of science. Like, I knew that he was dying. And so in March, when he got really sick and went to the ER one more time, and then my mom calls me. I'm in Monterey. That's where I go to school. My mom calls me in Monterey and is like, this is it. So I go home. Thank you so much. I go home, and I go see him in the hospital. I was able to spend, like, hours and hours and hours with him in the hospital, and he was awake every once in a while. That last time I walked in the room, and he was awake. He saw me, and he said, hey, babe. And, oh, my God, like, I will treasure that moment forever for a lot of reasons. But most of all, like, I was sober. I was sober when my dad died. I was able to be present for my mom. I have 6 brothers and sisters. I was able to be present for them. I was able to be not someone that they have to worry about and like, oh God, what's Caitlin going to do? And all these kinds of shit that like they would have in the past. This time I was able to be there and feel for them and feel the grief of my father passing, because he deserved that. You know, he did everything for us. So everything for my family. He was an amazing father. And he always supported me. And when I went to AA and when I was getting sober and all this shit that he just did not understand, he was still incredibly supportive of it. And now when things happen, like when I got asked to speak at this meeting, I remember telling him about it because he was still alive. And he thought that was so cool, you know, that I was going to be speaking outside of San Jose and whatever. And he'd never been to – well, he had. He went to an AA meeting once. I was doing a speaker meeting like a very long time ago. And he came to that, and that was – I don't know why I invited him. It was a bad idea. he did not need to hear half the shit that I said. But the point is, like, I got to enjoy that time with him. You know, when he died, one of the first things I thought when my mom called me to tell me that he was gone was, that's why I got sober. It was so that I could be there at that moment be there for my family. I needed to be sober in that moment. I needed to be sober for this. Like, God knew that this was coming and I didn't. But he helped me to get sober anyway, you know, when I did, so that I would be prepared and I would be spiritually fit and I would be a good daughter and all these things that I'd always wanted to be and hadn't been up until that point. And so for the last 18 months, my dad really got to enjoy me, you know, instead of being scared or worried about me, he got to enjoy me. And I got to spend a lot of time with him, and that's absolutely priceless to me. And, you know, this last month has been really, really hard, but I haven't wanted to drink. I haven't wanted to get loaded at all, because I've got this power greater than myself that's working in my life, and he or it or she or whatever has absolutely kept me out of harm's way. There are certain trials and low spots ahead, right? And like, we prepare for those things while we're getting sober and being sober. And when my dad died, I absolutely knew that that was what was going on. You know, like, this was going to happen, but I was prepared and I was going to be okay. And I know now that no matter what else happens, because other shit's going to happen, you know, other people are going to die and other catastrophes could happen in any moment. But I already know that I can stay sober through any of it. So thank you.
I don't want that thing.
Too bad.
Oh, yeah.
I had to have it.
That's me. All right. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
I'm not going to stand up because I'd probably fall down. My heart is fitting to beat out of my chest right now. I've been sober. My last drink was on November 10th of 2010. That's not my sober date. My sober date is November 16th, 2010, because that 6 weeks was the last time I got arrested, or that 6 days. I'm nervous because speaking for a half an hour, I have to tell my whole story. And for a long time, I didn't believe in really talking about how I got here, because it's my opinion that sometimes it's hard to identify with somebody that hasn't had the same experiences as you. Like me, when I first came in here, I sobered up in San Jose, right? And I used to go to these meetings in Los Gatos and listen to people talk about their experience. And I couldn't identify with them. I couldn't. I'm like, they're talking about a rough morning. They're not talking about my story, right? And, I started to identify instead of compare. And a couple of weeks ago, I heard the perfect explanation for it. And when you come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you learn the universal language of emotion. Right? And it really got me thinking, you know, when I first came in here, if you were a woman, if you were a different race, if you came from a different country, if you were older, if you were younger, like, you could not understand what it was like to be me. I was terminally unique, right? You couldn't. How could you understand, right? And looking back on the past 5 years, I can walk into any room of Alcoholics Anonymous anywhere in the world, and I know without a doubt every one of you knows exactly what it's like to be me. The method of delivery makes no difference, but that uniqueness, that black hole that exists in us, right? Like, you guys all know what that feels like. And that's why I love this program, right? My friend called me a couple of weeks ago and asked me if I'd come down here and speak. And, like, it's my pleasure, right? I live almost 5 hours away from here. And, like, it's my pleasure. You know, there's nothing in the past 5 years that Alcoholics Anonymous has asked of me that has turned out to be a bad decision, right? There are several times in my life that I look back on and I can remember thinking, oh, it's going to hurt, right? Or it's going to suck tomorrow morning. But there's nothing that I've done in the past 5 years in the name of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've ever looked back on and said, fuck, I wish I didn't do that. My life has done nothing but get better. And like, you know, Caitlin says, I'm able to be present for it now and I'm able to face it, you know. And I get a lot more out of it. I'm not going to say it makes it better, but I'm able to retain something from that particular experience, right? So my story, I grew up in San Jose. I grew up to a very average family. My father was a machinist for 35 or 40 years. My mother worked for the police department for about 25 years. I have an older brother. He's 3 years older than me. As far as I'm to know, I am the only self-admitted alcoholic in the family. How about that? Right? It says in the book that we don't like to judge other people alcoholics. I mean, it doesn't say that we don't do it. It just says that we don't like to do it. And there's a lot of people in my family, as we all do when we're new in this program, that we look and go, that person needs to go to a fucking meeting. Mm-hmm. Right? But it was a normal family, right? My parents were married for 33 years until my father died. I never went without, you know, my life was good. I only say that not to brag or to say, look at me, but I say that to say that there's nothing in my life, whether it be family issues or circumstances, that I can point at and go, that's it. That's what was wrong. Right? I can remember from a very young age, like I had issues. Like I needed to drink long before I started drinking. I can't say I don't. Like there's some people that I like now, but I didn't like people. I didn't trust people. I didn't. Like, I knew from a very young age that all I knew was your outsides. I didn't know what was going on inside, and because I didn't know what was going on inside, I was going to fill in the blanks myself. And like we do, when we play that game, we fill it in with the most toxic, gnarly shit we can think of, right? So at a young age, my parents took me to the doctor. And they laugh about it. Like we talk about it and laugh about it. My father took me into the doctor, pushed me into the room and said, there's something fucking wrong with my kid. Half hour later, the doctor pushed me out of the room and says, you're right. There's something fucking wrong with your kid. And so they gave me drugs. They gave me mood stabilizers. And later on in life, I started getting heavier. More awesome shit, but like that was my first lesson in life was the way that I was unacceptable to society, but if I took these pills, I was more readily accepted into the classroom, into other people's houses, you know. And as a young boy, like you remember those things, or as a young girl, like I guess. But you remember those things. Like those are the tools for life, right? And I don't remember much of my childhood because some of those pills were antipsychotic pills and they kind of affect your memory a little bit. That's it. That's my childhood. Can't remember much of it. My parents weren't big on taking pictures. Like, right? Like I don't remember much. Like I got a picture at my house of me sitting on Santa Claus's lap and I got to ride a pony. Couldn't tell you when it was, but like that's it. Like that's my childhood, right? I didn't break any bones. I don't have anything, like I said, I don't have anything to look back on and go, you know, that's it. There's some people that you listen to speak and they can tell you all about their last drunk, right? I can't. Like, my last drunk was like my 500th, was like my 300th. I mean, all kind of blended together. It was the same shit. Like, I was doing what I always went out and did, right? But I can tell you about that first time. I can tell you about that first time. I can tell you about that first time because that first night, for the next 20 years, like, I did everything I could to get that warm feeling back that I had that first night. I can tell you it was a bottle of Mad Dog Hawaiian Blue that I bought for $1.50 from Southgate Liquors in San Jose. I can tell you I was hanging out with my brother's friends who are all 3 years older. They're all a bunch of, back then, they were a bunch of juice monkeys, a bunch of douchebags, right? They all had flat top haircuts and wore Jordan shoes. Like, I thought they were tools back then. And I remember drinking that bottle of Mad Dog, and it took a couple of minutes, but that feeling, oh God, that feeling, that warm feeling that starts in your feet and it goes up through your spine and it fucking slicks your hair back. I can tell you about that, dude. I can tell you about that. Like, they were douchebags at 8 o'clock. By 8:05. Like, we were going to start a band. We were going to do stuff, right? And I felt good, right? I felt good. I felt, like it's been said, you know, that's the one thing about AA, that they say so much shit, and it's all pretty good, I guess. But for the first time, like, I was good doing what I was doing, where I was doing it with who I was doing it with, right? That's a common theme in my life, no matter what, you know? And I went home that night. I threw up like you do off of fucking screw top wine, you know? I did that. I went home. I woke up the next morning, and everything was fine. I remember that feeling. Because for the next 20 years, I chased that feeling at any cost. And I believe those three words right there are what make me an alcoholic. At any cost, right? And there's, it talks about it in the book. At some point, the alcoholic life becomes the only normal one, right? There are things that we've all done that, sitting in this room, we laugh, we giggle, it's funny. If a stranger were to walk into this room, they'd be like, those people are fucked up. Right? What's wrong with those people? They're laughing about that? Like, that's... But that was it. That was normal, right? My drinking career, how about that? I was a time traveler. Like, I'd be drinking at a bar in San Jose. I was in Santa Cruz. Right? I'd be drinking at a bar in San Jose. I was at Berkeley, right? I thought it was funny. Like, I laugh at that. I laugh at that now, but my mom listened to me speak once. The police officer, right? And she started crying. She's like, what would have happened if you had killed somebody? And looking back on that, like, I'm very grateful that I didn't, right? And we laugh about it. Like, it's funny. I look back on it and it cracks me up. You know, you're drinking in San Jose, you're standing in front of a couple of cops. You're like, how'd I get here? I can tell you from experience, if that happens to you, keep your hands where they can see them. Just nod. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Or we're going to jail. Let's go. Okay. I like to get in trouble. I like to get in trouble at any cost. Like, it didn't matter. Going to jail was just one of those things, right? If you play football, you're going to get hurt. You play hockey, you're going to lose your teeth. Like, it's just one of those things. If you drink, you're going to go to Elmwood, right? That's it. Like, that was my drinking career. There's nothing special about it, right? I'm not a violent person. Like, I tried to fight cops. When you're drunk, it doesn't work out. Like, they kick your ass. But, like, that was my life, right? That was my entire life. I mean, there's much more to it than that, in the sense of, you know, there got to be a point where I was putting whatever I could into my body to achieve that feeling. Maybe that bottle of Sapphire wasn't doing what it was supposed to do, so I go talk to somebody like Caitlin, get a handful of Norcos, you know what I mean? Go find a pharmacist, somebody like that. Like, I chased it. I never did get it back. I can tell you that without a doubt. 20 years, I never did get it back, no matter what I put in my body. I never did get it back. I'll end my war story with this. I got a half dozen DUIs in the state of California, right? My last DUI on November 10th of 2010, they started to talk about prison. They started to talk about big boy shit, right? They started to talk about getting a CDC number. They started to talk about lifetime ban on driving. You know, these things started to get thrown around the room, and I knew something had to change, right? Like, I'm not a prison guy. I can't. I've seen lockup. If you go to county, like, it's sick. My wife, she thinks it's some sick shit. Like, you go to jail, and they're all sitting around watching shows about being in jail. Like, I seen it. Like, I knew what it was, and I knew I didn't want to go there, right? So on November, I got a book through Alcoholics Anonymous, through the H&I. I got a book. I've still got it. And in the book, being the good alcoholic I am, I went through that entire book looking for the loophole. And I found it. It's in there. It says, if you don't consider yourself a true alcoholic, go try some controlled drinking. November 15th at 8 p.m., I got out of jail. November 16th at 8 a.m., I was walking into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? It just wasn't working. It wasn't working. It wasn't okay anymore. Like, I had that thing in the back of my mind that said that this is going to be a life thing, right? This is one of those forks in the road that are going to decide how the rest of your life goes, right? And either I'm going to be watching that TV show about being in prison, or I'm going to be talking to the reporters, right? And y'all are going to be watching me on that show about prison. And, November 16th, I walked into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. A friend brought me in here. She had been sober 5 or 6 months before that. And she was all about it. Like, she was inviting me to listen to her at speaker meetings when I was still loaded. And I'm like, dude, no, it's not going to happen. And, I chased a friend in here, right? My idea was I was going to come in here. That was November. My court date was April 21st of 2011. That's when they were going to decide my fate. So my idea was I was going to come in here. I was going to get these court cards signed. I've still got them all, every single one of them. I was going to get these court cards signed, and I was going to go to the judge and say, see, look, fucking better, right? And I was here about 30 days. My birthday, my belly button is on December 16th. So right about my belly button birthday, there used to be this meeting in San Jose or at Campbell called Couch Potatoes. Right? It's a real hip meeting. Right? Everybody gets dressed up pretty to go to it. It was pretty. And I caught it. Like, I caught. I'm a fucking alcoholic, right? And I started actually doing the work. I started doing the steps, and I started to do the house cleaning that they talk about. You know, they say more will be revealed later. And by the time I walked into that court case on April 21st of 2011, my friend came with me. I was an alcoholic. I had no doubt. I told my lawyer, like, dude, I'll take whatever they give me. I'm an alcoholic. I deserve it, right? In the book, page 79, it's my favorite phrase in the book. It talks about we must not shrink. We must be willing to go to any lengths to get this thing, right? And I was ready, you know. I was ready to go. I guess you could call it like a penance or paying the piper. Well, you can call it whatever you want. It doesn't matter. But I had made that decision. I was lucky. I only got 8 months in county, which in itself, like, is terrible. Like, county jail is a terrible place. It's not meant to be there for 8 months. But I read the book every day. You know, I worked with other guys while I was in there. I practiced what the book talked about. And like my life, I can't even begin to put into words what my life is like today. Right. Life isn't perfect. Life is life. Like, the world is going to do what the world does regardless of me. It took me a little while to learn that. But, Caitlin before me, like, she said it better than I ever could, right? Like, life happens, the world goes. But now I get to be there for it. Like, I'm not time traveling anymore, right? I'm not time traveling. I'm present for my life today. I got a little boy. He's 2.5 years old. He is the light of my life, right? He is me, and he needs a fucking drink. Right? He is irritable and discontent. That is my boy, right? And when the time comes, I'm not going to preach to him. I'm not going to hand him this book. I'm going to be the book for him. I'm going to be an example of what a person does when they're not trying to, you know, set fire to fuck everything, right? I'm going to show him that you don't need to quiet the world out just to live in it, right? Like, when I was drinking, the world was unacceptable to me. Like, y'all were not doing what you were supposed to do. And if you would just do what I fucking told you to do, like, we wouldn't have this problem here. I wouldn't be getting fucking arrested or tearing doors off of the hinges or doing whatever the hell we do, you know? And I had to drink. You know, just to quiet the screaming, the constant motion. Like, they say the earth is spinning at 20,000 miles an hour. I could feel it. Like, I was crazy. I told you in the beginning that I was prescribed a lot of pills by doctors, right? And they diagnosed me with some pretty serious shit when I was younger. I can tell you today that I don't take any of those pills. I can tell you today by working the steps. Now, I'm not saying drugs are bad, right? If you're seeing a doctor and, like, there's something not working right, like, you need to do what the doctor tells you to do. But I can tell you from my experience, borderline personality disorder has the exact same symptoms of alcohol. Right? It does. Look it up. WebMD. WebMD also tells me I got brain cancer, but it... not going to split hairs on that one. But I can tell you that through thorough work with another person in this program, and not just with a sponsor, but working with other men and women in this program, working with people who are working on the same thing that you're working on, the world's not quite as unacceptable, right? There are some things, like I drove here from Carson City today, right? I left a place that was beautiful, quiet, nice and cool, and I got to the MacArthur Maze, and it was not quiet and cool, and like people suck, right? They do, but that's fine, you know, let them go suck. I take care of my business. I keep my side of the street clear, and I do what I'm supposed to do, and things work out, right? I said in the beginning that there's nothing that Alcoholics Anonymous has asked me that I ever look back on and said, well, I shouldn't have done that, right? It is because of Alcoholics Anonymous that I don't look in my rearview mirror anymore. I don't. Well, I do when I'm changing lanes or something. But I don't look and see who's following me. I don't worry about what if they find out about that, right? Like that shit used to, ball of gin, take that away real quick, right? But I spent a lot of my life worried about if I get caught or if I, do I have the money to pay for this? What are they going to do? You know, funny story. I met my wife at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on Christmas morning, in the Tenderloin. If you haven't done that, like, it's awesome. And she asked me, I was telling her what my sponsor told me. I was like a year sober at the time. I was telling her what my sponsor told me and how he told me, you know, you don't ever say no to Alcoholics Anonymous, this, that, and the other, right? When the hand of AA reaches out, I am responsible. We've all read it, right? And she's all, really? Really? I have a meeting in Carson City. Can you come up and speak for me next Sunday? Yes, I would love to. And I got arrested when I went up there because I was still on a suspended license. My registration was still bad, and I got popped, right? And she walked over to the cop, and she's like, do I have to worry about this guy being around my kids? And he's like, no, he's just a drunk. He's got a bad license. And she's like, oh, all right. Took my wallet, bailed me out of jail with my money, and it was all hunky-dory, right? We got married like a year and a half later. It was, I had a son 6 months after that. Like, that's my, right? And, like, it was fine. I mean, Nevada's a little rough on suspended licenses, just in case y'all are thinking about going up there with a bad one. They'll put you in jail for a suspended license. Out here, they'll put you in jail and then check you out the same night. Like, they're a little cooler about it out here. But I ended up going in there. I got my wife pregnant like 3 days before I went in jail. So I went up there, did my 30-day stay in jail. And like, the first time I ever went to jail where I wasn't thinking about, I want to kill myself, or where am I going to get my booze at? Or, now, I'm not saying I enjoyed it by any means, right? Jail is punishment, right? Jail is paying for the mistakes you made. But I can tell you that because I was able to experience it, I was able to get something out of it. My registration is paid 90 days early now. My license is fucking legit, right? I don't have to look in my rearview mirror anymore. I don't have to worry about who's chasing me. There are some things that I'm still trying to take care of. The federal government wants their money. Bad. But that's all right. Like I just talked to an IRS representative the other day, and I told her, I said, you know, this is your money. Like, I've just been holding it for the past couple of years. Like, I owe it to you guys. Like, and she responded how I didn't think she was going to respond this way. But she's like, you know what? You're honest, Mr. Gibson, and you're probably the nicest phone call I've had all day. So do what you can. Do what you have to do. Don't worry about it right now. Right? The IRS. The IRS, mind you, said that to me. You know, I've been talking for the past 25 minutes, and I could talk for another 3 hours about all the things I've gotten because of this program. But the biggest gift that I've gotten from this program is I am not the center of the universe. I am not. Like, there's something else. You call it whatever you want. But there is something else running the show, right? The world is the world, period. The world's going to do what the world does. It's how I interact with it that I control. And when you're nice to people, people are nice to you. You know? When you don't hang out with a bunch of dope heads, your shit doesn't get stolen. When you don't go to the bar, you wake up with as much money as you went to sleep with. When you don't go to the bar, you wake up next to your wife. Your wife. Not somebody else's wife, right? When you don't try to hide from the reality that exists, regardless of whether you are part of it or not, you get to see what's coming, right? It's a lot easier when you can see that train coming, because the train still exists, right? It's still. I knew you were gonna flip that over. I saw you going for that piece of paper. You know, newcomers out there, if you believe that the world is going to miraculously get better because you're sober, the world is still going to be the world. But when you get sober, you get to be part of it, right? People invite you into their homes. People say thank you. People offer you jobs, right? People respect you. It wasn't until I came into this program that I learned what the word respect actually meant. I was taught that you've got to give respect to get it, that you have to earn respect. And, you know, that puts the world at a real disadvantage when you believe that they've got to earn your respect, and you end up hating a lot of people. Today, you have to earn my hate. I respect everybody I come across, because I know that everybody's got their own struggle. Every one of you in this room has a thing. Doesn't matter what it is, right? If it's important to you, then it's important, period. It's not for me to judge. But everybody in here has their thing that they're working on. And for that, you deserve my respect. Right? You're all sitting in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous on Saturday at 8 o'clock. Like, this is against my nature. Right? I should be pre-gaming to go out and game. Right? That's what we do. Right? But I'm not. I'm here. And I couldn't be happier. Like, this is it. I'm with my people. This is my pack. Right? I'm in a room with a bunch of people that doesn't have to ask me, are you okay? Right? If you're here, like, you're in pretty good shape, because you're not out there getting in bad shape. really, right? For at least an hour out of your day, you're in pretty good shape. Here you are. And I'm glad you're here. I really am. Because one of the things that they say in Alcoholics Anonymous is, I can't do what we can, right? And I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for the we, right? If this was a self-help program, like, we wouldn't be here right now. We'd be all out self-helping it, right? We'd be doing it on our own, right? But we're not. We're here because we need each other to do this thing, right? Regardless of that outside world, in this room, in the middle of Emeryville, right? Berkeley? Oakland. Like, we're here. I know Chetuk is right over there, and that's Berkeley. But we're here. Like, this is it. Like, this is, to me, this is the world right now. It is a room full of people doing the thing that we do to get by, right? Life isn't perfect, but life is good. Life is good. And if things keep going the way they're going, tomorrow's going to be pretty good too, right? And I'll end with this. On my book, on the front of my book, right here, I have a 24-hour coin. Because for people like me, the bar needs to be kind of low, right? So I know today's been pretty good. I'm going to drive home after I leave here, get home about 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. So I know today's going to end pretty good. Because in California, unlike Nevada, they do stop selling liquor. You go out to Nevada, you start talking about closing time. They're like, what? Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? So I know today has been a good day. And like I said, if everything keeps going the way it's going, tomorrow's going to be a pretty good day too. And that's why I'm here. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.